innovations that are going to be the most effective in law firms today, if we were to start now, are going to be workflow related, process related.
Are we leaders? Are we innovators? Are we managers? And how this constellation of the three worlds can work together in order to support teams and to support innovation at the same time?
This is the Future of Law podcast, where we explore what it means to be a lawyer and law firm of the future. I'm Curtis from Australia.
And I'm Tessa from Canada. We are two entrepreneurs working on each edge of the planet, bringing you a platform to explore what the future holds for the legal industry. Hello, Curtis. How are you doing today?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you again. It's good to come together regularly to have these conversations.
Yes, it's always a pleasure to share and to share with our audience as well. If you have listened to the previous episodes, you have heard Kudus and myself talk about leadership, the new law leadership. And today we want to take this conversation further and we want to talk about innovators. We want to talk about how is it different to be a leader, to be a manager, and to be an innovator.
How do you differentiate between an innovator and a leader? So if we're talking about leadership, how do you differentiate? Do they have to be two separate things? I guess that's the question, just to start off.
I see a leader as someone who inspire trust and inspire people to go beyond what they think they were capable of. And I see personally the innovator as someone who is more, I see it more as a solo kind of work, although an innovator may have a team, of course, to help. But I see it more like an approach which is more about incubating ideas and testing them and eventually bringing them to the crowds, to the people.
So does that mean that they couldn't be the same thing?
They could be. They could be. Okay. An innovator and a leader can be. Do you think they can be?
If the role of leadership itself is quite heavy and time consuming, it might be difficult to incubate at the same time and separate yourself from the realities while you sort of focus on one particular idea or innovation. But at the same time, I think that there may perhaps the qualities of leadership are still central to both, in the same way that the qualities of innovation should be central to both, I believe.
Yes.
Although a leader doesn't always need to be an innovator, but you know, the innovation has some qualities as well that maybe we need to look into.
And I believe the leader should be supportive of anyone who's taking the innovative role. Because an innovator inside an organization, whether it be a law firm or any kind of organization who does not have the support of the leader and the management, will never be able to innovate. And I think this is why I would like to circle back to that previous episode in which we were talking about, does leadership, you know, comes from the top down, or can we have a sort of bottom up a leadership approach? And this is very aligned with this conversation that we had last time together, because I believe that we can have many innovators inside organizations that will never be able to innovate because they do not have support from the leadership.
Yes.
So how can
so there
we...
definitely needs to be an environment for that.
Exactly. So how can we, if we want to move into this direction, and if for some of the listeners might be interested in knowing how can we empower those innovators that are already inside the organization? Or maybe we should have some innovators from outside the organization to help.
I think it can be a combination. I think there are several ways you can address innovation. And some of them have, you know, it's debatable which ones are going to be more effective than others. But certainly I believe that both of those options are something that we can do either internally or to have, you know, an external accompaniment both have their own quirks and features.
So how can we empower leaders and to become innovators? As a leader, you need to start spending time on innovation and putting innovation on the agenda. And you need to be able to involve the most creative people inside your organization to start thinking about how about your innovation strategy. And then eventually you need to get some support from people that are outside the organization, professionals that are outside the organization that can help build innovation capacities inside the organization, that can help provide a set of tools, a set of strategies, a process, a methodology, that are the methodologies being used by the most successful innovative companies, whether we, you know, whether we like them or not, they are successful. This is a fact. Yeah. They are really successful. And the reason for that is because they have a strong innovative capacities that they have because of the leader and right. because of what the leader represents. And also because it became part of the culture. Innovation becomes part of the culture in those organizations. So not all law firms need to have innovation as, you know, in the culture of the entire law firm. However, to be innovative, you need at some point to have a small team that becomes the innovative teams that is leading innovation. And then you need to support them. You need to support them, and you need to provide to them the incentives and the knowledge so that they can succeed, and eventually they can inspire the rest of the organization to, you know, onboard and to serve the innovation wave.
Right. I'm just thinking about the nature of innovation, the iterative way in which it moves forward, the appetite for risk that innovation brings and requires, actually, you know. And I'm just trying to think, when we put it on the agenda, I think we're actually saying we need to actually have more of a framework than an agenda. There needs to be short, mid and long term plans. 10, 15 years in the long term, midterm can be, you know, 3 to 5, short term can be in the next year or so, you know, that, but it needs to be, I think, a framework for innovation, like almost like I don't want to use the word policy, but a culture that we want to sort of cultivate inside of the organization. Mm-hmm. And that's going to need more than just putting it on the agenda. You know, I think that that's perhaps what it refers to. But what do you think?
I think the reason why I say it must be on the agenda is to make a statement. As a leader or a managing partner or someone in a senior position in an organization, at some point you need to make this statement that now is the time to consider innovation. Maybe not yet innovating, but at least consider innovation and see the possibilities. So by putting it in the agenda, I think it's a strong statement that the organization is willing to drive meaningful changes. And that allows everybody to be on the same page, you know? And then from there, the culture can start, the innovative culture can start to be implemented, but not across the entire organization necessarily. So you need to aspire. You need to, you know, like when President John Kennedy, he said, you know, in 1962, in a decade, we'll go to the moon. Well, that is a strong statement. I mean, nobody thought it was possible to do that. But when you make those statements that are so strong, well, what happens afterward? What do you think is going to happen afterwards? People are going to be so motivated to go beyond the possible in order to achieve that vision or so objective.
That's what it is. I think that's what it is, exactly what you just said. It's the vision. You have to set the vision and then, as a leader, allow those who sort of come to the fore or those who have the inspiration to be given the time, resources.
Exactly. And
dedicate to that.
Yeah. Yes. And I think to sort of go deeper into this conversation, are we leaders, are we innovators, are we managers, and how this constellation of the three roles can work together in order to support teams and to support innovation at the same time, I believe we need, first and foremost, we need leaders to make those statements. And once this is done, then we
you've set the scene.
Yes, you set
the scene. Environment.
And then we have managers who manage the day-to-day operations. You know, we're not going to ask necessarily managers to innovate. Managers are here to run the business, to run the law firm, and to make sure, you know, everything is working well and that it should, you know. But on the other hand, you need to have an innovation team, or at least, as you say, like incubate inside the organization and have a space and an environment that is helping and supporting this innovation approach, innovative approach. And that way everybody is, you know, like the manager knows that there is something that is coming up sooner or later that is probably going to change the way things are being done in the organization.
I was going to say, I would add actually, you know, the manager's role is actually is very important. I'm not saying that you mentioned it wasn't. It is important. But I think his role actually in playing a part in this sort of constellation is more than just managing the day-to-day. I think part of that is going to be the level of oversight that the manager will have, the level of data that should be driven through the manager. Those things are going to be fundamental both to the leader in understanding where things are going, but to the innovators who actually need that data. Innovations that are going to be the most effective in law firms today, if we were to start now, are going to be workflow related, process related, because the issue here is the efficiency of human labor, right? That's going to be the largest issue.
And so, how technology is going to help
to make that more efficient. And more, exactly. So my point is that in doing that, the one of the first steps you're going to take or going to want to know, or let's say the first thing, one of the first things the innovators want to know is what are people doing day to day already? And what does that process look like? How do they have a taxonomy for their information? Do they understand? Do they know the time that it takes to achieve certain goals, and what does that actual process or task actually look like when you break it down? These are the things that the manager can receive.
Yes, exactly, and can easily share to the innovator.
Exactly. What's going to be vital, right?
Exactly. Oh, for sure. And I would add to that it's not just data about the internal processes, but it's also data from the customer. It's also 100%. Important to capture those insights from the customer in order to discover what the customer wants. And that is probably something the manager is able to provide to the innovator, but it's also something for the innovator to go and find out for himself or herself in order to validate, you know, like do some hypothesis and validate those hypotheses. And eventually, whenever a new product or a new service or a new process is built, then to test it with the involvement of the customer. And of course, the feedback of, you know, the people working inside the organization.
That's right. I think that's, you've hit the nail on the head there.
So. Yeah, I think together we did. Not just me.
Yes. So I would be interested to now hear then, for the innovator, what does that look like? We sort of spoke a little bit about they could be internal, they could be external, but what are the characteristics that, let's say, if as a leader we want to encourage that environment, that we may also make decisions about who will take on that role, whether it's internal, external, or both.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we look for when we say innovator?
We look for someone who has this entrepreneurial spirit. The innovator is someone who is thinking bold and who is making bold moves. And this is what we seek. This is the first quality that we need to seek whenever we want to have an innovator. I mean, if we're just looking for another manager to be an innovator, this is not going to work. We need to find those people who are willing and eager and ready to bring those new ideas on the table and to implement them and to test them. And so that person should not be afraid of failure. And the leader and the manager should be supportive of that, because there will be what we tend to think as failures. There will be some failures, but they're not necessarily failures. They're just attempts. They're just, you know, we're just attempting, we're just doing an attempt to find a new way of working, a new way of delivering the service, a new product or a new service. And in the process of building this, of course, you know, like any invention was not created the first time perfect, you know, but eventually with perseverance and with courage, what I call bravery in action, with bravery in action, you can get there. That would be the first quality I would seek in an innovator, whether it's internal or external.
Right. So an audacity, courage, and an entrepreneurial spirit, something like that.
Yes, entrepreneurial spirit. And what about the skills? Because we have talked about characteristics or features. What about the skill set or the knowledge? Would you be suggesting to find?
Yeah. So one of the things that I think that stand out for someone that wants to, you know, or is going to be an innovator in this capacity is someone who is extremely observant and is comfortable with making observations and obviously recording them. But I think one of the skills that they would need to have be proficient is I guess comfort in a lateral view. So they would need to have a dot connecting skill. They need to be able to find connection where it doesn't exist elsewhere, and that takes a degree of now it's spreading into other things, right? So that takes a degree of, you know, observational ability to be observational. I think it takes I think it requires a lot of humility and a lot of curiosity to be able to, and the skill would be to ask very good, very pointed and very valuable questions that open up, that facilitate finding the information that you're looking for. You'd need to be highly empathetic as well to understand where people are coming from, whether it's internally that are struggling with certain things or would like improvements in certain manners, but also externally, like you said, the customer. So empathy is central to almost any innovator's work, because they either are trying to become customer centric and understand the customer, so that requires a lot of empathy, or the internal struggles of perhaps one division inside of a firm, or, you know, an office or a department or a practice area.
Mm-hmm. How about technology? Because now we're talking a lot about, you know, the mindset of the innovator,
the behavioral things. There's behavioral things.
But I'm sure the audience will be highly interested in knowing, does the innovator needs to be knowledgeable of technology? And my question to you as well is, well, is it only about technology when we innovate?
It's not, and I think that's what I was getting at. The first improvements. In order to be effective, you have to address innovation from both a behavioral standpoint and then a technology standpoint. And I would actually, at this point, probably say that it is starting at the behavior and then moving to technology. Technology, in absence of any change in behavior, isn't going to create any sort of change that's meaningful. But they do. We need to know. We need to understand technology. We need to recognize how it works, how it's being used elsewhere. And by elsewhere, I don't necessarily mean other firms, but just generally in society, because again, that's very much there's a crossover there. You know, if your client is part of general society, then you need to understand what their behaviors are and what technologies that they use. That's how you're going to create a seamless environment or a seamless interaction with your firm.
For sure, because technology is allowing, I agree with you, because technology is allowing incredible new opportunities for the legal field as well. And what I mean by opportunities is really a way to engage with your customer that is actually much more intimate with the digital transformation. And it sounds maybe a bit you know, paradoxical. Maybe some of you who are listening are going to be surprised, but actually not at all, because those tools, as you said, Kudus, we are using those technological tools in our everyday life, in the way we interact with one another. Using those existing tools or creating new digital tools will allow law firms to actually have a more intimate relationship with their own customers. And I believe technology is a great part of innovation, but we should not only focus on technology. We should think in a much broader term as to innovation, as to not just the integration of technology or the development of technology, but also what is our business model and how do we seek more growth and how do we engage
build a more effective service or product, right?
Yeah, and how do we serve our customers? And so it's about also the business model. Amazon is succeeding at accelerating growth every day because it's using technology in a way that is so easy for the customer, and it has a business model, you know, that is creating a lot of value for the company. So it's I think the innovation comes not just by using technology, but it comes first with the vision of how we want to do business and how do we put the customer at the center of the business model. So the value proposition that we offer to the customer is attractive to them, you know, is engaging. They want more, you know, customers want more, they get hooked. And it's kind of weird to say that because in the legal field, customers are usually not hooked by legal products and services, you know, on the contrary, you know,
but that's part of how we've positioned it, right? Where you come to us when there's a problem, whereas the reality is you should be always in contact with us because we can actually guide you and support you in your commercial endeavors, in your family endeavors. You know, it really is not just come to us when there's a problem. Mm-hmm. Because if it's come to us when a problem, then you're always in a problem when you approach the legal services. And that does create a good psychological sort of response to lawyers as well. You know, because you're always you're always having problem. Mm-hmm. You're always in a bad place when you reach out. So, we need to sort of change that. And you're right, the business models and approaching it from a different angle and understanding how legal services sort of penetrate the industry now, as opposed to in a traditional sense, and in terms of customer sentiment or buyer sentiment, it will be central to figuring out then maybe the way we've structured our business and how we deliver, how we meet the person, how we start a file, how we open a file, all of these things will then change in terms of process and how we engage the customer.
Exactly. I so agree. So innovation is not just about technology and R&D. It's much more, much broader. And so this is why I think the best innovators are ones who have different realms of experiences that they can bring inside the industry. So whether they are knowledgeable of the legal field and the legal industry, I think that is great. But I don't think they necessarily need to be so knowledgeable. But in a way, if they're not, you have to pair them with someone who is very knowledgeable and who has this open mind to share in a very transparent manner whatever is happening, not just inside the specific organization, but in the industry at large. And so then
that would need to be given in any circumstance. Transparency between innovator and the innovator has nothing if he does not have an eye into what is actually going on. You can't make any improvements if you don't actually understand what you're trying to improve. So, you know, and in terms of knowledge, just I thought I'd jump in there and just say that in terms of whether they have to be knowledgeable, they do have to be knowledgeable, but perhaps not in the things that are traditionally considered knowledge in our field of work in the legal industry. So So having a legal background is going to be important, I think,
mm-hmm.
Though not always necessary, but probably very beneficial. But I don't believe mm-hmm. you need to have, for instance, 5 to 10 years at practicing as a lawyer to know that it's not working, and that it, you know, you would have some answers about how to change that, if that makes sense. So
no, because you're bringing fresh ideas, and it's not just about bringing the ideas, but it's also like, you know, like transforming those ideas into tangible solutions. And mm-hmm. you know, the solutions, if they are innovative, they must be new. So although, as we often say on the podcast, we understand that the legal industry has been working, you know, for a certain way for a long time. Now it might be an appropriate time to change that. And so if you are looking for a new way of working, well, yes. then you don't necessarily need to have an innovator who has extensive experience working as a lawyer in a law firm, because when you're seeking for novelty, and that novelty yes. will more likely come from an outsider who has some knowledge about how the industry works, rather than someone who has been, say, managing law firms for yes. his or her entire career. And again, yes. I'm not saying the manager...
And in fact, that it's not... it can go either way. There are exceptions to the rule, but from what I've understood, and my own personal opinion is actually that those that have spent, you know, from junior to even, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years in a firm or even longer, are often then sort of taken over by the cynicism of that industry,
mm-hmm.
or being jaded by the lack of movement in that industry.
And
or,
this is why we need innovators that are doers, and we need leaders to support those doers, and we need managers to also, you know, support this movement, you know, by collaborating, you know, because otherwise we're just killing all of the creative potential that we have inside our organization. And all of, not all, but some or many of the junior are going to feel quite, you know, correct. Exhausted in sooner or later, because there's just so much opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where the role of the managers and the leaders is so important, in terms of the environment that they put people who may have ideas into. Mm-hmm. It's all because that environment is almost guaranteed to wipe out the majority of the enthusiasm that people would have. And that usually comes with the juniors as well. So
yes.
it is very important that that's kept in mind, that when we talk about innovation, there cannot be any trace of, well, this is the way it is. We can't have that.
No, we can't. Right? And we need doers to break those patterns. And the right. more innovators we will have in the industry, the more proof we will have that actually by doing, by prototyping, by testing new ideas and new solutions, you can get innovation pretty quickly, and it doesn't have to be expensive. And I think we already talked about that. It's about putting a new kind of lens, but having those doers, so having those entrepreneurial spirits coming inside the legal industry with, you know, this new approach and this new set of skills and this new methodology, it can only benefit to the organizations, at least those who are willing to move forward into the direction of the future, in order to be, you know, examples of positive changes and to take leadership. So I think doing is extremely important. We need to do, we need to prototype, we need to test, and all of that doesn't have to be always expensive, and it doesn't always have to integrate technology as well. Now, what time is required? How much time do we need to forecast in order to reach us innovation?
From a position of who? So from a position of someone who is leading a firm and making that decision,
mm-hmm.
innovation is a constant. And in terms of looking for results, it's completely commensurate to how much time and resources and space and freedom you give to the person who's innovating. Oftentimes, if you choose to do that internally, especially in the smaller, mid-sized setting, it can take a lot longer because you're shifting someone's role from one thing that they're used to something that they'd like to do, but perhaps the internal structures are not in place. When it's external, it can be quicker because perhaps the external business or company is actually designed to do exactly that. So they will bring they will come and they will, you know, find their links and link up with everything that they need to in a firm and then get to working and work alongside the firm. But that speaks to how important it is, the way in which external innovation would engage with the firm. And for me, I personally strongly believe that it needs to be an accompaniment process, a collaborative process, rather than a innovation for hire or innovation for service sort of setup. It really needs to be an organization being connected with a firm.
Mm-hmm.
And then collaborating with them on an ongoing basis to create and instigate the changes. Because there's a lot of insight that's required. We talked about transparency, about knowing exactly what's going on and those relationships and building those relationships. You know, we talked about the characteristics of empathy and, mm-hmm. and being able to understand and empathize what's going on internally and having some background. So like having a background in law and understanding it, understanding how legal practice or private practice or in-house counsel generally works, you know, and being open to ask those questions to clarify certain areas. So that skill set of being able to ask really pointed questions that open up, build clarity about what's going on, and then observations. So all of these things, I would say it all depends. Internally, it could be fast. It could be fast if it's set up the right way. Externally, it can be generally more fast as long as the external organization engages really well
mm-hmm.
and gets good context with the organization. What about you?
Yeah, I so agree. I agree innovation actually can be faster than we think. I have been facilitating innovation sprint, and in just 90 minutes, we were able to prototype entirely new products and services. I mean, then, of course, it's not just about prototyping them. It's about implementing them. But
that takes time.
Yeah, but whenever you have an idea that is transformed into a tangible solution, then it's only about developing the solution. And again, it doesn't always have to imply the development of technology. It can actually be as simple as testing a prototype and with the customers, of course, and collecting yes. insights from them. And then, you know, making the prototype better and eventually invest in technology. So, I mean, from yes. my experience, it can be really quick. And again, I think you really hit a good point, Kudus, is it depends on the culture inside the organization. It depends on the processes in place. We'll get faster innovation if we have the right processes in place, the right organizational culture in place.
Well, the willingness at, you know, as a first point, it needs to be the willingness of the leaders, right?
The willingness of the leaders, ones. Yes, and the support and the good environment, and it can be really quick. So from my experience, again, 90 minutes was enough to prototype solutions, and I've actually facilitated sprints of 1 to 2 days, and we get results, we get solutions that are
yes.
can be taken into implementation. Of course, you know, this would be,
and that's in an external situation, right?
Exactly. So that's
engaging an external.
Exactly.
Yes.
And that yes. means the organization is willing to have what I call a smaller innovative team that is going to then, you know, sort of manage the innovation, you know, in a way.
Yes.
So it's not managing yes. operation. It's more like managing the innovation part and,
yes.
And running the test and collecting the feedbacks and
yes.
making
and that's,
the improvements.
And is that an ongoing relationship, right? With,
yes,
with the
it
external
is.
Innovator.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And then in just a couple of weeks, you know, you can get some new products out there, you know, on the market. And it can be really fast. So the only limit, as I often say, is your own imagination. And the other limit is the resistance, the internal resistance that needs to be broken. And I think, again, this needs to come from management and leadership roles.
Yes. Well, that's a good, I think that's a good place to stop, but I think we've got more to cover. There's actually a few other points that I think that would be interesting to explore next time. I think procurement is really important, especially as we step into this new age of legal service delivery. We need to have procurement processes in place that are not bound to a committee, if that makes sense. You know, there are things that will need to be purchased and purchased quickly and budgeted for in order to be able to get innovations off the ground and get technologies implemented and moving, and or even to accept external innovation support. You know, if we don't have a procurement process, then really the pitch or the approach of an external innovator is going to come to an entire committee of partners. And, you know, what is the motivation of each partner, and what is the reason for them saying yes or saying no, and how do you get everyone on board, et cetera, et cetera. So a lack of a defined procurement process makes it very difficult to engage with the pace of change that's going to happen. So it's something that I thought maybe we'd talk about next time as well.
I would love to continue this conversation with you in one of the next episodes. And in the meantime, feel free to connect with Kudus and myself on all social media platforms and to engage with us so we can also have those discussions with you inside the podcast.
That would be fantastic. Feel free to write to us at thefutureoflawpodcast@gmail.com or reach out to us on Twitter and Facebook. And we look forward to hearing from you soon.
Thank you for joining us. If this episode resonates with you, we'd love for you to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your colleagues and friends. Follow and leave your feedback on Twitter. And like us on Facebook.
You can connect with Tessa and myself on LinkedIn, Twitter, and you can also visit our websites, futurelab.legal and legalcreatives.com.